This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Well, at least one of them.
Well.
Hey.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, we have a couple of friends who've been on the show before and a newcomer. We have the lovely ladies from Llama Inn in New York City. Please welcome to the show again, Lynette, Cheska, and Rekha. Welcome.
Thanks for having us here.
Yeah, it's awesome. So you guys recently, I guess about a half a year ago, opened up the Llama Inn in New York City, and you have a Peruvian drive behind this place. Can you tell me a little bit about it? I actually haven't been there yet. I've been working on that, so. But I've read a lot of really great things about it, so give me the rundown.
It's an awesome place. The food is absolutely amazing. It's sort of a French, Peruvian sort of inspired food. The chef is classically French trained, you know, used to be at EMP and spent a lot of time, you know, really developing his Peruvian side of his. He
is Peruvian. So he's first generation born here. Being a first generation Puerto Rican, I get that whole idea of like being a part of your, bringing to your heritage and try and feed that into your normal life. He lives in Williamsburg. So the idea was to really take this food and cuisine that he was also familiar with. He worked at a place called Ramey here in New York and did the recipes for the desserts and also the savory food. And he wanted to kind of demystify what Peruvian food can be. A lot of the places that opened in the past in New York were very Lima in their like grandiose, you know, bring your chica sort of va-va-voom heels kind of way, which is very much how the, you know, when you go to like Mexico City and you see those kind of restaurants or in Lima, that's very much the way those restaurants are received. But for a New York audience, he wanted to bring it to Williamsburg and have this more intimate vibe. So the owner, Juan Correa, is also a Peruvian, and he met Eric, and the vision was to bring parts of Peru to New York, but in a very urban, fantastic way. So when you go, I mean, here's kind of the description. You get off the Lorimer, L stop, you cross down the little quiet streets, and you go underneath, you know, the BQE, and all of a sudden there's these glimmering, beautiful lights and this building on a corner that seems out of place. It's this bright-colored blue painting. Building of brick, and inside you see glimmer of color, and that's exactly what they wanted, to be this colorful little highlight in the food and culinary world while being very traditional. And it's beautifully designed. All of the weavings that are inside the restaurant, the artist went down to Peru and brought back different yarns that she commissioned from different tribes in Peru. So at the heart of everything that happens there, it's Peruvian, but with this very, you know, there's Neo-Rican, and I guess this is like, you know, Peruvian Nuevo Peruvo, however you'd call it, that is, but it has that soul of it. And that's what's really exciting about being in a space, in an area that's really having a huge up-and-coming change, which Jessica used to live in the neighborhood, so she knows a bit about.
It has changed a ton, but it's like the food scene in Williamsburg is amazing, and there's nothing like this restaurant in all of New York. It's just really unique, and he's very creative and has come up with some really amazing dishes that are comforting and
pushing the envelope of sourcing ingredients too.
Exactly.
So we have an ingredient coming in called Camu Camu, which we're going to be the first restaurant in New York, if not the U.S., who's actually going to have fresh Camu Camu. So he really pushes to try to find these ingredients. And a lot of the things that come in, unfortunately, are frozen because to get them from Peru to New York. So he really is pushing the envelope to find the resources.
And that was great for us, too.
it's like some crazy, apparently it's a crazy aphrodisiac in fertility. I've had it in ground form that he's given to me, but I haven't seen it yet.
He's like, slip it in your drink or something?
Slip it in your drink. He wants us to use it in a cocktail. I'm like, let's taste it, see what's up.
Yeah, we have to taste it first.
He's not been giving us
a lot of things, actually, to work with in our cocktails, and that's been a big thing for us, is to try and really make sure that there's some sort of Peruvian focus within each cocktail, to sort of take the classic cocktails and then really like drive in the Peruvian ingredients, which
has been
fun to work with.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always fun to, you know, we
get a new
we've all
ingredient.
Been doing this
like,
for a while, you know, we've worked with like everything, so like to having like new ingredients coming along, it's like, you know, it breathes new life into the sea. But like, so you're the then the cocktail list and like the bar is definitely kind of like culinary driven, you would say.
Absolutely. Rebecca just came on board and she's learning all of the prep that has to happen, and it's pretty intense. It's like, it is a kitchen, and the some of the ingredients are very labor intensive. Like the chicha morada is a 2-step process of taking Peruvian purple corn, and then every house in Peru has their recipe for it. So one chicha will taste it from another, and this one is Eric's mother and grandmother's recipe, and it has apples and pineapples and cinnamon and cloves and all of these beautiful things that you cook over time to make this water. Then we turn it into a syrup to use it in our drinks, but it takes a really long time to make this drink and to have it. So it, you know, we've been very lucky to get great press on that cocktail because probably because the clever name that the chef, the owner, the Llama Del Rey, because he named it, and it really sung to that cocktail when he threw out that name. We're like, this is it, the one on draft that's kind of weird and a little nostalgic and kind of brooding, and but it goes down and easy and slightly sweet. So that's kind of like, we're like, yeah, that's totally a Llama Del Rey.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a no-brainer on that one. We're like, that is the name of that drink.
That's awesome. I love stuff like that. Like, you know, the kind of like indigenous recipes for different drinks that are like, not necessarily cocktails, but, you know, kind of like local stuff like that. It's always like fascinating to me, you know? And like, and of course, we're just going to fucking throw booze in it. And like, so that doesn't need to be alcoholic before. But that's really cool. So like, it's Peruvian. So obviously, you're using like a lot of piscos and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. We have a ton of pisco, a ton of Peruvian pisco. Did you want to say something?
No, I mean, we have an unbelievable pisco list. I've never seen such a big list, and people order off of it and want to know about it, and it's really cool that people are so excited about learning about pisco and want to taste things and compare things, and it's cool, it's exciting.
Are you guys seeing a lot of sales for pisco, like just like on its own, like as a neat spirit, or like are you doing any kind of like fly training stuff like that?
So yeah, we are getting a lot of, I mean, a lot of it's hand sold through the restaurant, but people are interested in the list. You know, it was really important to Eric and Juan to have a Peruvian pisco list to really show the differences, you know, from the Ica Valley to all over, and then the different marks that are coming in. On our side, that's, it can, it's kind of, we can kind of look at where, you know, tequila was a few years ago. So, of course, it's sometimes we're getting supply issues because all of a sudden we're like a huge spike in these sales, and distributors are like, what's going on? And you're like, bring us more of your, you know, most of it in your Italia and all these really great varietals that at, for one point, if a bar had one pisco, they're like, great, cool, I've got a pisco.
Right.
But to see the beauty and the nuance in the grapes, which I think is really important when you're, you know, especially in a restaurant, the wine knowledge. And when you look at the list of even the wines that we have, they're very progressive in the style of grapes that we're using a lot of Spanish wines and sherry, and then anything that's really South American varietal. So there's a lot of things that are unfamiliar to our guests, so they are coming in with enthusiasm and excitement to understand what all those things are, and they're embracing it more than I really thought that they would, I think.
And it's very exciting for people who are from the area, like from the Peruvian who are Peruvian from Peru, to be able to have some place that can encompass everything. They're like, oh my God, this is exactly what I've always wanted. And families coming in and drinking pisco together with their meal.
It'd be like if somebody opened up like an Oklahoma bar for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting to me nowadays where, like you were saying, Lynette, you know, having like one pisco behind the bar, it's like, all right, done, you know, whatever, move on. It's really interesting to me like cachaça and pisco right now are like two categories that I think are, they've always been around, but they're like staples for a lot of classics, but they've just been kind of like misunderstood, you know, like are not kind of totally, absolutely misunderstood. And there's so many varietals out there, and it's really cool to see that people are actually getting into it and interested.
And that interest makes the importers bring more in. So a lot of, there are so many more piscos even available in Peru. One of our bartenders, he does a lot down there. He's from there. And he was saying that there's so many other ones that we don't even get here, because just to get that brandy out of the country alone takes a huge amount of interest. And I think that's where you're looking at cachaça. Like, all we had was really industrial cachaça for a while. And we had kind of really just like industrial pisco until about the cocktail scene started, and you had people like Melanie and Lizzie Asher, you know, sisters who are entrepreneurs who decided to quit their corporate jobs, being a lawyer and working in finance, to go ahead and start this company of Machu Pisco. And then Barsol, again, is a very similar story with Diego Lore de Mola. He has, it's the same story. He was in importing and business and finance, and then decided to kind of throw all that away and go back to the passion and the spirit of their countries and bring that here. And I think that's a very similar story of what we see now in tequila, where you have like David Suro and people who are very tied to, you know, their families and bringing those products in. And that's great to see, just kind of how much it's expanded, and testament to the cocktail culture that it's stretched the boundaries and the mindsets of people in the U.S. to try more of these things.
Right. To me, it's really interesting. You know, you mentioned tequila. It's kind of like what was going on, you know, 20, 30 years ago with tequila, where it's like, all right, we've got Jose Cuervo, we're done. You know, it's like, that's it.
And mezcal. It's like, it's very, it used to be like, oh, you couldn't get a decent mezcal, period. Right. So.
But I think that's super interesting to me, too, because, like, these are, I feel the same way about, like, you know, go back to, like, cachaça, rum in general, and, like, cachaça and pisco. These are, like, these aren't, like, regarded, they're not, like, the same thing as, like, a 40-year-old scotch, you know? It's not, there's not, like, this heritage behind it where, you know, these dudes in kilts have been making this shit for hundreds of years. You know, it's like, this is like real, like, working class, like, family tradition, you know, like, with a lot of these types
Absolutely.
Of spirits from South America and Mexico. It's like, it's really cool that, like, you know, especially, you know, you mentioned David and, you know, like even like Domingue, you know, like, they're really, like, opening up these spirits that have been made for a long time by these families, but they're, like, allowing them to actually have an audience and a market where they can fucking pay their bills.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? What Ron Cooper does, you know, he's, you know, for all intents and purposes, a hippie artist from New Mexico who went down there and was like, hey, man, this agave is really sweet. Why is it so awesome? And now we,
really,
you know,
sweet.
Really sweet. Man. But he's brought so many bartenders down there to the Palenques to meet these people, to meet these families who are still, you know, using the tahona and to grind it up. And, you know, even in Encanto, we had a training at the bar yesterday. That company has really started bringing bartenders to go down to understand the process of harvest and to touch the product and to help blend, to have a better understanding of how unique blending, you know, a pisco can be. It's a, you know, at the same time, when you look at those kind of brandies, how much more delicate they can be because there's no oak to cover it up. So your distillation, and in Peru, distilling to proof as opposed to adding water and balancing, that's a really difficult art, and you have to get that cut. And there's that artistry and that culture that is you know, passed down from people to people and family to family. And I think that's what's really beautiful. And in general, they tend to all be Latin spirits. So I'm a little bit partial to, like, and like, it's about your family thing. It's what you pass down, and it's expresses of the culture that you're from. And that's really important. And I think that's what we want to respect. And I think what really, when Jess and I met Juan and Eric, it was the idea that they were so passionate about bringing the culture of what real Peru is like to New York through its food, through its drink, through design, to show how progressive it can be, even though it's still tied to things like weaving and that culture that's very antiquated. So I think that's a really romantic vision of what they did. And I'm super happy for them that it's being recognized and received very well, because I think that's, you know, anytime any of us would put our heart in our sleeve, and we do this as bartenders, bartenders all the time. We're like, there's this drink I thought was amazing. And then if someone's like, eh, it was not that great, you're like, so like, oh, but I poured my whole soul into it. So I think that's something that we do as artists in this industry. And it's great when you can see people really putting that passion out there, and it gets rewarded with, you know, people in the neighborhood coming in and, you know, being very fortunate to have good accolades and people understanding what the idea was.
Yeah, totally. You know what? Actually, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, let's talk about your process. We're just talking about making cocktails and the challenges with some of these ingredients and the process that you have used to get to where you are. All right, we'll be back in just a moment with the ladies from Llama Inn.
Enough time for waiting. A love that lasts is love so contagious. I want it bad, so bad, my heart's aching. My mind stay clear, my heart's racing. Just wait, wait, baby, let's be it. My soul deep inside yours gravitate to the love that we see it. We're breathing, we're living, we're in it to win it. Your love is forever, your body, I'm missing.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
All right, we are.
The last commercial just made me realize I need to start my seeds.
Yeah, that was good.
Tomato plants.
Totally. All right, we're back here listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network, and we have the ladies from Llama Inn in New York City. We're talking about Peruvian cocktails. We're talking about Pisco, and then started talking about the cocktails. You know, actually, I had never been to Peru, but I was supposed to go in December, like mid-December. And then I like had a ticket booked and was going down there. And then I realized, oh, shit, it's mid-December and I own a bar. Like, I'm not leaving town.
No.
This is a bad time to do this. But I was really looking forward to it. And I'll get down there one day. But so before the break, we were talking about kind of leading into – we talked about Pisco and we started talking about the cocktails. And like to me, like Pisco to me is a really interesting cocktail ingredient because of – the fact that it is, I mean, like, I love cognac. I love Armagnac more. I love like, all types of eau de vie and grappa and stuff like that. But, like, as far as, like, a grape distillate goes, it's really unique compared to all the rest of them. It's, like, super floral a lot of times.
Absolutely.
And, like, it has that, like, kind of, like, Mark eau de vie kind of thing on the nose. But it's, like, it's just, like you said, like, even before the break, you know, distilling the proof is a huge factor in that.
Huge.
So, like, the aromatics, you know, when you have, like, obviously the most iconic Pisco drink would be a Pisco Sour.
Of course.
It's kind of like, I mentioned cachaça a couple times before the break, but it's like, you know, cachaça is really great in things that other than the caipirinha, you know? It's like,
absolutely,
there's a whole world out there. So especially like what we're talking, again, going back to before the break, talking about how many Piscos are available in the U.S. now and how many more keep coming in.
Exactly. And we were just talking about it, you know, Rebecca is really looking at bringing more, fusing the bar and the restaurant and coming up with more ways to showcase how beautiful Piscos can be and work on how they work with the menu as just a sipping, which I mean, I think you wouldn't really, like, now we're at a place, like we said, people are drinking like Monero and, you know, Chichicapa, the words right. that people had no idea. So how can we start now in phase two of Llama, bringing the different varietals of Pisco to the consumers who come in and give them the secondary education of now we're broadening your horizon and how do you have a Pisco with your Llama Saltado, which one makes sense? What kind is going to make sense in the pairing?
Like, so if I rolled into the bar and I were like say I'm a like I said before, you know, like I'm an Armagnac drinker. Like, which pisco would you, or which direction would you lead me into, like as far as like having one on its own?
Oh, that's a good one.
You know what I mean?
I think maybe the Mosto Verde.
Yeah,
to start.
Just to start, that being like a nice sort of like transition to things that are almost a little bit brighter. Mm-hmm. To have something that's just really round and gives you some of those notes of like, sort of like silk.
I like silk.
Who doesn't like silk? Yeah, and then when you get into things like when we were tasting like the Italia, that kind of gets more botanical for it. So in our mind, like with us tasting it, we're like, that's kind of more ginny. And then we just tried yesterday the Barkeep's Whimsy, which is this blend that bartenders went down with Encanto to create, and it comes out in a couple weeks. And it's more like raw pineapple and very green.
Pineapple and lavender and honeysuckle. It's really special.
Do you find yourself doing a lot of shaken drinks versus stirred, or do you
no keep not it pretty necessarily? Well split? I mean, they're, you know, shaken drinks are always more popular.
Yeah,
but I think that when we conceived the menu, like we definitely wanted to go in more of a direction where it's like, why not use these as stirred ingredients and really highlight them?
Yeah, I think it's to me like I always lean towards like a stirred drink anyway. That's stirred spiritus drink, which is why. You know, with my shirt off in a lot of bars, but and that's cool too, man. You know, yeah, I found just as recently as like the last few months, I've been messing around with pisco and stirred drinks more than like, you know, because like I said before, you know, like it's always been the pisco sour.
Absolutely.
That's like where you start. You know, it's just like with like. Well, with white rum, it's like it's a daiquiri, you know. Like anytime, like someone brings like a new rum into the place, you're like, all right,
let me try it with the daiquiri.
Yeah, you do the daiquiri test. But I've been trying to look at pisco over the past 3 to 6 months, maybe, with like a new palate, and I've kind of wean myself. Don't get me wrong, I love pisco sours. It's a lovely drink.
And if you're in Peru, you drink them 3-1-1, so it's a really strong shaken drink. And we're like, whoa, slow your roll. That's a really intense drink.
Yeah.
So the part of the menu, so a lot of the ways, you know, we didn't know how well received the pisco products would be received. So we thought very much like, well, if we kind of like, you know, hide the pisco in something very familiar, that'll make sense. So one of the drinks that we put on the menu is El Chapo, which is pretty much, you know, Jess was like, well, why don't we just take like the construction of something we all know, like a Vesper, and play around and, you know, mix pisco and tequila and make this nice sort of soft spirituous drink. So because you have like the Coke Americano to help balance it out, but all the flavors come through. So like playing around with what's the backbone and what leads. And I think that switches over the course of that drink. You know, when you first start, maybe the tequila is more present. And then as it warms up a little bit, then the floral notes really blend through. So it's a really fascinating trick to see. And then we did a variation on an old fashioned using a product that's more of, it's a fortified sort of wine made from pisco grapes. So, and it's called Perfecto Amor, and Barsol was just playing around with different ways. So it's kind of like vermouthish, but with that backbone of, you know, the brandy in there. And so we use that in an old fashioned style by split basing that with scotch and then using the chancaca, which is their like pilloncillo or brown sugar in Peru. So taking familiar and mixing, then changing ingredients. So people kind of just like went with it because it didn't seem so intimidating.
Right. I mean, well, it's like a gateway drug, you know? It's like
exactly.
I do a white Negroni with pisco and like Sue's and it's
beautiful.
It's really great. It's great. It works out so well because you've got the gin with like the kind of like floral grape notes, like it and like the body of the pisco actually kind of like balances out the really dry, stark bitterness of the Sue's. So it works out really well. But like that's why we have our jobs. Because we do that. That's what.
And sometimes it was just tasting the pisco, and then you're like, "Oh, I know what this would work with," and building from that. But we definitely, everything was sort of thought of like, let's keep this very simple. Let's keep the like the insane amount of ingredients sort of low, if you know cocktails, you're gonna immediately be like, "Oh, that's the base of." This style drink, right. And that's the base of this drink, and it's it's almost keeping it simple, stupid, but having like a lot of things that you might not normally work with, as far as the, you know, the munya and the chunkaka and purple potatoes.
Munya is like an insane spearmint that grows in the higher altitude in Peru, and you're going to get it dried. And so when you make it, it's super fragrant and minty and has this like really great vegetal thing that comes through. So there were, it was playing around a lot with those things that seemed familiar, but then even taking some things, if we didn't have a pisco in the drink, we wanted to really make sure there's a Peruvian element. So, you know, I'm a big fan of tiki. I've been a rum girl for a long time. So I was like, chef, can you make us a quinoa orgeat? And he's like, yeah, I think I can totally do that. And then we came back the next day and he had like three versions of it for us to try, you know, with every different like way. Was it more almond versus more quinoa, 50-50? And then we went with the quinoa forward and it adds this like creamy peanut butteriness. And then, you know, when you have
our
quinoa,
orgeat,
food,
it's so
it's
amazing.
Just, it's really good.
That's awesome. That sounds really, really cool.
Come in and just taste the orgeat.
Yeah, really yeah, yeah. Like, I'm psyched.
Got some in my bag. It's just there.
You got some in your bag, right?
We actually do.
Cool.
We're
right
at Grand Army tonight.
Oh yeah. So is that one of the drinks you're gonna be making tonight at Grand Army?
Yeah.
Sweet.
The cumbia, which is the traditional dance of Peru. So really tapping into the culture, we kind of have really fun ways of thinking about how, you know, we did a really fun tongue-in-cheek New Year's Eve party that was kind of just really for friends and family, sort of kind of fun thing. And apparently in Peru on New Year's Eve, you throw around yellow underwear, like boxer brief underwears, and like people wear them.
Wait, are they supposed to be yellow? Or they?
Yes, they have to be yellow.
Okay. Yellow. It's supposed to bring
not just
prosperity.
Like dirty.
No, it's gross.
So, we all show up and there's like a box of, you know, underwear. We're like, what on earth is this? Like, it's tradition. We're like, All right. I have to go to Peru on New Year's Eve, apparently, to understand.
Well, speaking of taking off your clothes, I guess we're going to go back to my bar, and I'll probably end up with my shirt off again. Check out Llama Inn. The website's llamainnnyc.com. You should definitely stop by there when you're in town. If you live here, you should definitely become a regular there. And tonight from 5 to 7... the gang is going to be at my bar at Grand Army for our happy hour, and we're going to be having some of the lovely drinks from the Llama Inn. Thanks so much for being on the show today. It's lovely to see you guys, and it's nice to meet you today, Rebecca.
You as well.
Thank you,
yeah, can't wait to come by. Until then, let's boogie. All right, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Tune in to heritageradionetwork.org for many other shows like this. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.